will draw you a picture today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Today, Jason Platt tells us he signed a contract with a major publisher. We'll get the details, then the Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor on Scribble.
Jason, how are you?
Doing great, thanks.
I suspect you are because you've been on the news lately for signing a really important contract. So let's begin there and then go back to your beginnings
sure.
as a writer.
What's the deal? Who's the contractor?
I have recently signed a contract with Little Brown Books, Young Readers, and a graphic novel based off of my comic strip, Mr. and Me. But this is Mr.'s Misadventures in Middle School.
Hmm. Okay.
How in the world did that come about? Do you have an agent?
I do.
Okay. How 90% of the people listening to us want to know how in the world you got an agent.
Getting an agent is not an easy process.
No,
and I wish that there was like a direct way of like saying this is how you get one. My path was. My own, but I actually was a part of the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators.
Right.
I call it SCWBI. I don't know if that,
right.
that's
okay.
what I call it. And one of the great things, and I'm not too sure what it's like right now, but there's in the Iowa chapter, there is a SCWBI conference every year
right.
in Davenport. And so I took advantage of that to listen to lectures and meet people and everything. And my future agent, Jodell Sadler, was one of the speakers there. And she also was reviewing material, writing and illustration. And we got to talking and she wanted to sign me up right then and there. And that was in 2015. So it's been a little bit of a while for us to get to where we are now, but it's been worth it.
What was she really impressed by? I mean, that seems almost magical given the difficulty that a lot of people have getting published.
Yeah, I think it was a cross between my experience, my past experience, the work that I showed her, but and my writing as well. And it was just a nice blend of everything. And at the time, she was looking for author illustrators, and so I kind of fit that bill pretty good.
Which itself is unusual, right? We've interviewed several children's writers, and they all complain about the fact that they do not get to choose their own illustrator.
Yeah, in the realm of publishing, usually the editors of the firm will actually hire out and pick the illustrator for the project. And that's one of the advice that I often give people who have written a children's book because they are looking for an illustrator. And one of the things I tell them is to submit their work without the illustrations because they don't need to have them completed to have the book purchased.
It's an interesting field. I see so many children's books mentioned in Publishers Weekly. They seem to be coming out in floods. And obviously not all of them are going to be successful, I guess. I don't know what makes a success in a children's book.
You know, we talked to a thriller writer a couple of months ago, and he has an agent, and he said he'd just called his agent before he came in here for the interview. And the previous week, the agent had received 1,000 inquiries.
Wow.
So what happened to you? Just, you know, you slipped in between the cracks in a good way.
I guess so, yeah.
Or you're really good.
Well, I hope there's a magical blend of both, maybe. but what really helped, too, was that in last February, I believe it was, My agent, Jodel Sadler, actually merged with another agent, Jill Corican, in California. And the both of them together have are just, you know, just fireworks. And they've certainly helped me out a lot.
Well, do they have an idea of what publishing firms to approach? And, you know, they must know people in those firms.
Yeah, and that's one of the great things about having an agent. When you don't have an agent, you're just blindly sending out your manuscripts out, and they're unsolicited. But unfortunately, sometimes they will go into what's called the slush pile. But with having an agent, they are, in a sense, like the gatekeepers. An editor for a publishing firm will look at their submission knowing that it's passed the agent's test, basically. And so they've opened the doors for them to even consider. So I think almost in any realm, having an agent is one of the best first steps that you can probably do.
Well, you've signed a contract. Now, what do you have to do?
That is a great question. when we submitted my graphic novel, it wasn't a complete manuscript. It was only 144 pages. As a graphic novel, that's pretty big as itself. But we thought that we had enough material to show the editor's story and character and drawing. And so that's what we would submit. And then my first step was to get the story and the penciling done, which I've already done, and sent that off. But then I have a deadline of March 1st to have it all inked and colored and ready to go.
They approved the story that you sent. They liked it the way it was. They didn't suggest changes.
Well, I'm sure that there will be changes along the way, but they liked the story and the art well enough, obviously, to sign me up.
Now, when you say you sign a contract, is that just for the one book?
It's a 2-book deal.
Uh-huh. Now comes the hard part.
Right.
Coming up with the other idea?
Yes.
Actually, you know, I have a backlog of other ideas that we actually submitted with the submission packet to let publishers and editors know that there are books beyond this one story. And since it's based off of my comic strip, I'm taking the same mentality of writing the books as I do the comic strip. It's just long form.
Where does your comic strip show up?
Right now, it's just on my website, MrAndMe.com. If you look Jason Platt comic, you'll find it. Mm-hmm. It's something that it's been a labor of joy for me. I created it back in 2008 just for the pure enjoyment for my son as a single dad and his little boy growing up and our adventures.
And that was published as a book too, wasn't it?
Yes, I self-published 2 books,
right,
as a collection,
uh-huh,
and which is really great to look back on.
Well, now, you know, that's a great expenditure of effort, and just offering it to the public. And you did that in the hope that something would catch on, or just because you felt compelled to do it?
At first, just compelled to do it. As my story goes, is that when my son was like a little baby, I had this little sketchbook of him that I would draw, and I would like record his milestones. So I would draw him live, and then like write down his milestones for that day or that week. And then when he turned 3, I wrote him a book of poetry with some illustrations in it. And then when he was getting older, I was thinking, what am I going to do for him now? I want to do something special before him. And so doing the idea for the comic just came out of the blue. I was working for a publishing company as an illustrator, and the ideas just kind of combined and blew up into a great thing.
So as you keep writing about him, is he growing up in your strip?
In the strip, no. In the strip, he is perpetually 5 years old.
Okay, because that's a big difficulty. I mean, some comic strips, they do grow.
Yeah, some of them do.
And
yeah,
some they don't at all. Dagwood never changes at all.
No, he still loves those sandwiches.
Right, yeah.
Well, his cardiologist must have a problem with that.
Actually, his kids grew to a certain age yes. and then were arrested
right.
in development.
Yeah.
It's that is a hard thing to do, to talk about, people change. People do change. And you have seen comic strips where young people have grown old. But that is not the norm. That's I think the great comic strips stay in an eternal present. That's just my prejudice.
Well, in the comic, my character Newell, the little boy, as I said, is perpetually 5 years old. But in the graphic novel that I wrote, he's in middle school, so he's like around 11 or 12 at this time. So, which was really great to explore because he was taller and more independent. The dad in the story, he's still present, but not as present because, kids when they're reading stories, like let's say like third to seventh grade, they want to read about peers. They want to read about kids who are older than them. And so that's where the story like kind of blossomed from, was to show Newell in this new realm of discovering life as a young adult.
Are you stuck in a Peter Pan world? Are you always going to be writing for kids?
I also write more like prose as well, but they're unpublished. They're mostly just for fun. But you know what? There's nothing better. When my son and I, when he was like little, we actually read the whole Harry Potter series together. And there's something magical about sharing a book with your kid that is unmatched. And so if I can be a part of that, if I can help spread that same type of connection on some level, it will just mean the world to me.
When do you have time to eat? I mean, if you're writing prose, you're drawing.
I don't write prose all the time.
No, but you're acting. I mean, you're going off in all directions, aren't you?
Well, and that's exactly where my point was. You and I had a conversation about Bruce Carter a while back ago, and I was on his conversations, his Art Talk show, and he was saying the exact same thing, and I realized that if I want to be successful at one thing, I need to concentrate just on this one thing. And that's what I've been doing for the past like 8 years. I still do theater and I still touch base on other art projects, but I've been concentrating on cartooning and storytelling that way for a while now. And just because I want to, my conversation with Bruce Carter just really impacted me that day.
One of the things that, as long as I've got a graphic novel writer here.
Sure.
Why do you think it is that recently, at least within the last few years, graphic novels have become respectable? I mean, they weren't, right? I mean,
right.
Back when I was reading comic strips, my mother, I had to read them under the bed covers at night because my mother was an English teacher, and if she ever caught me reading, a cartoon, that was it. But they, graphic novels have become a real genre today.
Yeah, I think starting back in like the mid 80s, when you had like Alan Moore's Watchmen,
right,
and Frank Miller's Batman, Dark Knight Returns, suddenly the realm of comic books and graphic novels became like, oh my gosh, this is like a serious art form, and let alone thinking of like Art Spiegelman's Mouse graphic novel, which won the Pulitzer Prize in 1992. Suddenly it became aware that, oh my gosh, this is an art form that can be meaningful and tell like a rich story. But it also, for younger audiences, it touches on those reluctant readers as well. Those kids who will open a book and see the written word and be intimidated by all those words and like, oh my gosh, how can I read all of those? It seems like a chore. But when you throw like images with it, that's telling also an equally rich story. They are engaged in their reading, but they're enjoying the artwork at the same time. So it's really great. But also with telling a story not just with prose but with pictures, you're also showing like the nonverbal stuff as well. And so
right.
They're seeing like a character's reaction when someone says something. So they're catching on to other things that traditional books don't.
The novel itself was not respectable when it first came out. Was it Sir Walter Scott or Thackeray that had to publish under a pseudonym? Because how could somebody that dignified publish a novel? Right?
Yeah, it's. I don't know. I've often wondered about that. I worry about the decline in reading, because reading. You do the work. You do the graphic work. You create the images in your own mind. You have a pretty good idea of what these people are. In radio, people listening to us obviously picture you as a handsome young man and me as I don't know what. And Jason sounds like Superman today.
Well, we're all wearing top hats and ascots today, so.
I want to make sure to get one other question in that I've got down on my list. The same question that you would ask of a songwriter is that which controls which, the music or the lyrics, or is it the words that determine your cartoons, or the cartoons shape the words?
They blend so well. It's like saying what tastes better, the frosting or the cake?
Oh, okay.
You know, it's but together they're amazing. You know, sometimes. One of the ways that I kind of describe my way of writing, whether it's writing the comic, the graphic novel, or like traditional prose, is that I use what my own term is. I use tent poles. I don't really outline, but I see the story, and I see like specific spots of where the story goes, and those are the exciting scenes that I see. And so I will put like a tent pole at the very beginning, and then my job is to get to the next tent pole. And it doesn't really matter like how it gets there, but as long as it gets to the next tent pole. And the journey there is really fun, and it's really exciting to explore and see what fun things that the characters will come up on their own. It's fun.
Yeah, I've often wondered how anybody writes anything, how you tell a story, because and I particularly am amazed at people who set out points in a story that where you're going. I think I can't do that. I can barely start anything. And to proceed to a particular point, I don't know. My head just doesn't work that way when it works.
Well, it's kind of like if you were to like describe like a favorite sitcom episode of like, let's say, Seinfeld. You're not going to describe like the whole show verbatim. You're going to do points of interest. You know, it started out in Jerry's apartment, and then Kramer came in, and then they went to the mall, and then this happened. And those are the tent poles that I'm kind of talking about. Mm-hmm. And I kind of write like that my outline the same way.
Well, I must say it'll be interesting. Your deadline is March.
March.
And then when will the book be published?
The following year, so 2019.
That's a long gestation period.
It's amazing how long it takes.
Yeah, it is. That's almost as long as it takes me to get out of bed. But Jason Platt, thank you very much for being our guest today.
It's a pleasure.
And with that, we're going to turn to another distinguished person, Garrison Keillor. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. And on to the book bag.
And I have a book that is timely, given the turmoil and the troubles that the world seems to be faced with today. It's a book by David McCullough, and I read anything by David McCullough.
Oh, yeah.
But mm-hmm. I happened across this one because Ann Kovach, who reads for the blind, brought it in last Tuesday and said, look at this. It is a 15 speeches by David McCullough given over the last 25 years. The title of the book is The American Spirit, Who We Are and What We Stand For. About half of the speeches are commencement speeches, the University of Pittsburgh, Barnard, and so forth. But the others are events at which he was asked to speak, the bicentennial, a naturalization service for new immigrants in Washington, D.C., the 50th anniversary of Kennedy's death, the 200th anniversary of the Capitol, et cetera, et cetera. These are incredible essays because they aren't just the usual pablum that you hand out at these events, right? They are upbeat. They call us back to who we are as Americans. They deal with the importance of history in solving problems. And so they all look back in one way or another at history. He's a historian. But he doesn't give, with his commencement speeches, the pious generalities that we all turn out when we do commencement speeches. These are specific suggestions. At the University of Pittsburgh, for instance, he talks about what the University of Pittsburgh can do in the way of new courses to preserve what he considers the central fact of the United States, the city. Mm-hmm. Our culture is the city, and if the city falls apart, which cities are, we're in real trouble.
Yeah.
So here's what you can do, right?
And that is a change because in the past, the country was the city.
It was the city, but now it is the city. And increasingly, right?
Yes.
In another 50 years, almost everybody will live in cities and mm-hmm. almost no one will live in countries, in the country. Anyway, this is visionary without being naive. There's no pie in the sky here, but clearly you get the feeling when you're through reading these essays that the American dream is still alive. Might be hurting, but it is still alive.
You know, I've read that book myself, and like you, I read anything McCullough.
Right.
If he writes recipes, I'll read them.
These are recipes.
Yeah, and he is he's one of the most gifted writers I've run into.
Unbelievable.
And his histories just go back to the first Johnstown flood. He was looking to write a history and discovered no one had really written one on
right.
that, so he did.
Right.
And from there on, he took off, and it is just a marvel to follow his career. And everything about the man, how does a guy get to be that good? Not only an easy speaker and writer, but obviously he has a great mind. And to put all that together in one person gives you someone that you'd almost like to have run the country.
Well, and these speeches, I for his books, he clearly has researchers
mm-hmm.
looking up facts for him. These clearly are things, I mean, these are all in his own real voice, and they were just fun to read and inspiring.
Yeah, and I would recommend anything he has put a pen to. Because David McCullough is truly one of the gifted writers of our age, and almost everything he chooses to write about is worth hearing. Want to give us the name and again?
The American Spirit, Who We Are and What We Stand For.
Okay.
And it's a thing we need to be reminded of.
And I'll remind you that Roll Tweet and I'll be back again next week for another session of Scribble, and we hope you will join us then. Until then, have a nice week.